the grace that crosses boundaries. In the story just read to us, we meet a nameless girl, Jewish, and a slave who acted courageously in faith. We will look at this passage in four parts, just to see how it speaks to us and how we may go about the business that God has called us to do. Speak like a servant. This is covered in the first three verses. Speak like the servant. In God's economy, what seems small and insignificant can hold the power to initiate great change. The voice of a little captive girl set in motion the events that led to Naaman's healing. A slave girl becomes a faithful witness in captivity. We know very little about this girl, except what we glean from verse 2 and 3. Now the Bible says, bands of raiders from Aram had gone and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. Verse 3, she said to her mistress, if only my master will see the prophet who is in Samaria, he will cure him of his leprosy. Kidnapped and enslaved by the Syrians, she became yet a servant of another nameless woman, her mistress. The little girl, a mere child, and a female, powerless, marginalized and enslaved at that, is multiply disempowered. As Naaman's suffering from his leprosy increased, it surely distressed his wife. This can be assumed because the little Israelite girl must have noticed her mistress's distress. The slave and her mistress, I would say, are the heroines of this story. The Israelite girl was the first to speak. That is a bold move for a child, let alone a slave child. Slaves are supposed to be seen, not heard. She risked everything by speaking up and putting her faith on the line. It is faith that drove that young child to stick her neck out and suggest that Naaman consult with Elisha. Notable was her action on that day, that centuries later, Jesus refers to it in Luke chapter 4, verse 27. He says, there were many people with leprosy living in Israel during the time of the prophet Elisha, but none of them were healed. The only one was Naaman, and he was from the country of Syria, not Israel. What an amazing thing. Her confidence in Elisha was astonishing, because we have no available data that Yahweh's prophet had cured leprosy before. So it was a risk that she took, suggesting the possibility that this could be done. One can only imagine the horrors the little girl would have had in store if Elisha failed to heal to heal Naaman. Though traumatized through slavery, yet she bravely took that risk. She also took another risk, perhaps an even more dangerous one. In speaking confidently of her people's God, she was inherently challenging the gods of the Syrians. After all, the Syrian gods had failed to heal Naaman. The young girl, therefore, was speaking prophetically against these gods who are powerless. She was declaring that she believed her people's God was more powerful. And the child's prophetic critique could be seen as a form of theological resistance. Additionally, and astonishingly, the child embodies a spirit of compassion and kindness. She ultimately wielded the most power that influenced the course of international politics in those days through her bravery and faith. What do you say when one king from a foreign nation writes to the king of Israel, this time not inviting them for war, but asking for a favor? King of Aram writing to the king of Israel. It was an amazing thing, because these two countries have been at war with each other. And of course, this slave girl was a product of a raid in Israel. Naaman, you see, might have been a mighty man, but in the end, it was a mighty girl who saved his life. This child is not only a model for us of courage, but a model of kindness as well. As far as we know, she may have hated Naaman, but she was willing to put aside that hate and acknowledge their shared humanity. Regardless of what she felt about him, even if she felt he was her enemy, she wanted her enemy to not be in pain. That is a powerful testimony for anyone, let alone a female child living in an extraordinarily scary situation. Her bold faith challenges you and challenges me to consider how we might, in simple ways, become catalysts for God's grace in the world around us, reminding us that boundaries are about human perception than divine limitation. This little girl's faith, I must say on reflection, humbles me. I don't know if I would have personally have had the faith to bear testimony in a strange, hostile nation among the people who didn't believe like I did, and especially not to the people who have taken me captive away from my home and away from my people. She's an example to me of forgiveness, of compassion, of faith and great courage. Think about the risk she took in suggesting that the prophet be consulted. What if no one listened to her? What if she was ridiculed and laughed at? What if the prophet hadn't been able to heal Naaman? But she didn't let her fear keep her silent. And God took her little seed of faith and worked mighty miracles with it. What is the barrier, or what are the barriers that stop us, you and I, from telling others the good news of God's love and saving grace? Is it fear? Is it apathy? Lack of compassion? Or is it low confidence in the power of God, which the Bible tells us is mighty to save and to deliver? What is stopping us? I ask you again. Second part, seek despite skepticism. This is covered in verse 4 to 7. Verse 7, I will start with that. It says, as soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me. The girl's fate and Naaman's quest contrast with the stubbornness of Israel's king. A leader in Aram, in an unbelieving nation, sought the God of Israel. Yet Israel's king, own king, will not. The king's skepticism highlights human boundaries of understanding versus God's plan. The king's reaction shows how earthly authority often approaches divine interaction with fear and misunderstanding. Yet through this, we learn to trust in God's broader vision, encouraging us to look beyond our limitations when God calls us to act on faith. The little girl's brief word to her mistress brought healing and faith in God to a powerful Aramean commander. God had placed her in that place for a purpose, and she was faithful. Where has God put you? No matter how humble or small your position is, God can use you to spread the word. Look for opportunities to tell others what God can do. There is no telling who will hear your message. Many have paid, and many are still paying, the high price of hardship in following Jesus. Permit me to illustrate this with the story of the Dapchi schoolgirl's kidnapping in Nigeria. On February 19, on that fateful day in the year 2018, Boko Haram militants attacked the Government Girls Science and Technical College in Yobe State, and they abducted 110 schoolgirls. The Nigerian government secured the release of most of the girls, but Leah Sharibu, a Christian, was not among them. Reports indicate that Boko Haram kept her back because she refused to convert to Islam. She was 14 at that time. Some reports also now suggest that she has been forcibly converted and married off to a Boko Haram commander. As I read this to you, it's heart-wrenching. I'm sure some of you are really touched by this story. Imagine how her parents, her siblings, the Christian community she comes from, imagine how tough it's been for them. Yes, her story is painful and sad, but it is also a story of bravery, of faith, witness, and courage. Three, subjugate your self-importance. Verse 8 to 12. There are two parts to Naaman that I want us to look at quickly. Naaman had an impressive resume, but we'll see the but later. In verse 1 and 2, he was described as a valiant soldier, decorated, celebrated, outstanding. Naaman was everything the little girl was not. He was adult, he was male, he was powerful, he was privileged and free. His name actually suggests he had undoubtedly been a handsome man, at least before the leprosy. In a tragic irony, this mighty man of beauty now was inflicted with, of all diseases, leprosy. Leprosy normally destroys one's physical beauty. Leprosy, much like AIDS today, was one of the most feared diseases of the time. In its worst form, leprosy led to death. Incurable in Bible times, lepers were separated from families and friends and confined outside the camp. Because Naaman still held his post, he probably had a mild form of the disease, or perhaps it was still in the early stages. In Nigeria, where I was raised, I saw many leper colonies that were situated outside big cities. The bodily destruction of this disease makes it easy to identify victims. Many of you listening to me, perhaps today, may not have seen a person with suffering with leprosy. The last known indigenous case of leprosy in the UK died in the year 1798. However, there are still cases that are picked up in individuals who have recently arrived from countries where the condition, where leprosy is endemic. The other point regarding this condition is that in the Bible, it often is used to depict sin. Sin is contagious and destructive, and it leads to separation. That is why Romans chapter 3, verse 23 tells us that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It is important, therefore, if any man hears this, it is incumbent on that man to seek ways of getting away from this destructive thing called sin. And just a prayer of submission to Jesus and asking him to forgive can start the journey for any man, no matter what they have done in their lives. B, Naaman was an angry, rageful man. If we look at verse 11 and verse 2, verse 11 tells us he became angry and left, and verse 12 says he was very angry and turned to leave. If he became furious simply because he disliked the miracle that will cure his leprosy, who knows how rageful he would have become at that powerless slave girl who made a fool of him by suggesting a false prophet. Elisha's challenge to Naaman underscores our reluctance to accept simple acts of faith for healing and grace. You hear many people saying, how would this change be a game changer? That I do nothing, just trust that Jesus died for me. They want to be able to list a number of achievements that in order that they can make the cutoff mark point. But with God, it doesn't work that way. Naaman's initial response of anger shows our human tendency to want spectacular solutions. Yet, God often works through humble means. We're invited to let go of pride and follow God's ways, however unassuming they may be, in order that we may experience true healing and grace. Point number four, submit and see salvation. Verse 13 to 15. The little girl's witness brought about the healing of Naaman and his spiritual awakening. He became a believer in the God of Israel. He who had subdued nations, including Israel, came back to seek the God of Israel. He bowed the knee before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, whom he confessed as Lord. When he dipped himself in the River Jordan, even though it was considered as dirty, there was a reenactment of baptismal rite. And as he rose out of the water, not only was his leprosy cured, the deepest need of his heart for the forgiver and savior was met. He became a new creature. The conqueror of nations found rest not in warfare, but in the bosom of a loving God who draws all men, whether Jews or Gentiles, black or white, Hispanics or Caucasians. He draws them into a loving relationship. Naaman, you see, was a broken man. In spite of all that he had achieved, he was a broken man. But in God, he found rest for his soul. He found healing for his body and also for his soul. Verse 15, then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." He was humbled by the generosity of God's grace and love. He now refers to himself as a servant of the prophet. This outcome illustrates that Naaman's healing is a testament to the powerful results of following God's call with actual obedience, despite initial reluctance. His servant's words led to him submitting to a humble act that bridged cultural divides and brought restoration. This moment vividly signifies God's grace, which operates beyond human limitations and invites us to share in his inclusive love. Your unmet need, I repeat it, your unmet need may be the entry point of something great in your life. Because you see, the God we serve is the one who determines the end from the beginning. And his will is to take you far beyond that point of your need to something even greater. something of eternal value. Like Naaman, we must lay down our trophies, our laurels, our degrees, our achievements, so God may elevate us. Humility is important. Remember what it says about Jesus Christ in Philippians chapter 2, how he humbled himself. So humility is important. And remember this, you must continue wherever you are able to honor the weak and marginalized. They may, you can never tell, they may be the link or the conduit to your breakthrough or to your blessings. As I conclude, I want to say this passage illustrates how through the prophet Elisha, Naaman not only was healed of his leprosy, but by the grace that was given through his prophet, love reached across dividing worlds. Arameans or Syrians were foreigners, were not part of the Commonwealth of Israel, but God extended his grace to that man. God is still in the business of saving. He's still in the business of healing. He's still in the business of restoring. Let us trust him. Let us trust him to do that which he does well.